Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting all over the world today and all of the different sister stations that carry us. We're going to talk about health and nutrition, showing you how identifying different molecules with anti-inflammatory properties in foods that we didn't know had them. For example, from University Laval in Quebec, they found that maple syrup has very strong anti-inflammatory molecules in them. That's good. Also, how vitamin D can help fight inflammation, turn off inflammation. And if you're looking for the next superfood, well, you won't find many of it in the United States, but in Europe, you'll find it. It's the black raspberry. Also, obesity is more dangerous than just a lack of fitness, a new study out of Sweden shows. Also, we are going to look at cacao flavonoids, improving blood vessel function in kidney disease patients. And we're going to study how mothers' educational levels directly relate to the telomere length in newborns, meaning something happens in the evolutionary pathway where you stress your brain to learn, and that DNA is then passed on to your child. So they end up having a particular telomere length in their brain. So the more educated you are, and I'm sure it's not just education, I'm those who study, those who challenge themselves, play an instrument, for example, learn another language, you're also doing the same thing. So that's good. We'll talk about that. Also today, from John Whitehead, does fear lead to fascism? A culture of fear and the epigenetics of terror. I think you'll find this interesting from Op-Ed News. Also today, two things on the environment. Extinction is forever, Robert Burrows. And what's happening in Tibet? Impacts over 2.5 billion people. So I'll tell you about China's leading scientists warned that large areas of the Tibetan Plateau, the life-giving source of Asia's major rivers, are now suffering from desertification. That's a bad thing. I also saw the latest article from a major scientific publication last evening while waiting in an airport. Yesterday, it was West Palm Beach, today Atlanta, every day a different place, and getting this major film finished. And I saw where the entire southwest of the United States is going to go into a very severe drought and desertification. There'll be major fires. There won't be water in most places. And quite simply, it's not sustainable. There was a time when I would have recommended certain places in the Southwest. Today, I don't recommend any of those places, meaning places such as no place in Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, about 80% of Texas, about 70% of California, southern Utah, New Mexico. These are the areas that are being hit and will only get worse with less water. And in California, it's interesting, when you drive up the state, and I was talking to the driver who was driving me to a medical conference where I was one of the keynote speakers recently, and I said, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? Are those gas mains and electrical lines out of the ground? He's, yes. I said, how long has this been going on? He said, oh, for several years now, a couple years. And he said, but it gets really bad in some places. Why? They're pumping so much water out of the ground that it's creating a vacuum. That means that the weight bearing above collapses down, and hence, in effect, it heaves down. And so what's in there heaves up. Well, that's not good. You don't want gas lanes. You don't want lines. You don't want water lines above ground. It's very dangerous. But also, what about train lines? And and other things that could go wrong, bridges. So discuss that. Also today, I want to share some insights on issues that we generally don't hear a lot about. And I've had enough feedback from people around the world. And remember, there are good stations who broadcast on local issues. In fact, it is my thought that WBAI, one of our sister stations, where I've been for nearly 40 years every day, that I believe that they would do really well if they exclusively focused on local issues that no one else is touching, with people from the local community and using the internet. That is what I see to be a solid future. But other programs, other venues, hit with larger issues all over the world, as we do. So today, we're going to have Prince talking about working to live or living to work. We're going to have cervical vaccine. Is it safe? The lives of more than 1,000 teenage girls who are completely normal have been ruined because of this. Also, how honest is Hillary Clinton? Now, keep this in mind. I asked a large audience recently that I was lectured before. I said, look at the person beside you, stranger or friend or family member. If they lied to you, but they didn't lie to the person on the other side, are they a liar? If they stole from you, but they didn't steal from the other person on the other side, are they a thief? If they betrayed you, but didn't betray the person beside you on the other side, are they a betrayer? And people were thinking about this, and I could see they were kind of challenged because we have people in our lives that betray us, gossip about us, use us, and yet we try to apologize for their indiscretions. And then I say, well, how many times should you allow yourself to be abused or beaten or maligned or slandered or gossiped about or stolen from? What is the magic number? I don't know. Well, think. I mean, is it 2 or is it 2,000? Because if you told someone, look, it's okay, you can lie to me 2,000 times. It's 2,001, that's it. Or what would be different if you told someone, you lie to me twice, you're out of my life. Don't give me any excuses about the good sex. Don't give me any excuses about what you think you feel about me. The reality is you are, in the moment that you're with me, either doing something constructive or destructive. How you justify it in your own personality is your business. But I'm not a part of the game that you're playing any longer. What if you did that? How would that impact you? Well, we're going to talk about that. If we can get all this in, great. If we can't, well, there's always tomorrow. Let's begin. One of the single most important vitamins we can take is vitamin D3. If you're in the sun, you're getting it. You'll need about 45 minutes a day of over about one-third of the body, and you'll produce about 20,000 units. Taking it orally each day, when I was growing up, our mother each day would put this terrible-tasting color oil in our mouths, and we took it because she said it helps you. It did. But vitamin D should be in everyone's life every day. This is from Cancer Prevention Research. Here's what it says. Vitamin D may be a part of a powerful strategy to reduce chronic inflammation and the related risks, many diseases, including cancer, according to new research from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. The study suggests that vitamin D, combined with weight loss, has greater effect on reducing chronic inflammation than just losing weight. So that's very important. So vitamin D will help turn off inflammation. Now, here's the point. And this is the danger. Are you listening through a monotheistic ear to people who are monotheistic in what they're doing, or people who are far more holistic? What do I mean by that? I just finished a study at the Institute of Applied Biology. I asked, could I work with some of the rats that had cancer? And they were doing all this orthodox chemotherapy research. I was the strange bird up on the third floor doing nutrition research. And I don't believe in cruelty to animals, so I would never put an animal in an experiment. What I did, however, is they had a way of killing their animals, meaning they put an X across at night, and then those rats would be suffocated, put into a drum, and the air dropped out, pulled out, and then they start all over again. And they do this with millions of hundreds of millions of rats a year. So I would go down at night. I would look to see where there was an X marked. I would then take those rats, take them upstairs, and I would do all kinds of things. I would put on beautiful music. I would bathe their bodies in essential oils and colloidal silvers. They would get the best organic juices and organic grains and feed, and they weren't in any cage. They could run all over the place. And a large number of them survived. And so about 9 months later, at a Monday meeting once a month where all the different departments report, I said I would like to have a large group of rats. They said, for what? And I said, I'd like to be able to do a follow-up to prove what I just discovered. And they said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, the rats that you were using downstairs, and they were not benefiting from your therapy. Well, I took those upstairs, and I healed them and brought them back to life, and I want to do it again. Well, instead of asking how did I do it, they were angry the fact that I didn't go through the specific protocols. And I said, well, it's not true. I asked the director of the institute, and he said, yes, he did. But I didn't know what he was talking about. And I said, let me get this straight. You're angry at me because I was able to do with nature what all 16 departments here couldn't and haven't done with your chemicals. Wouldn't it maybe a good idea to ask how I did it and then to challenge me to see if I could do it again? No. All they knew is that it couldn't be done. And how did they know it couldn't be done? Because they'd never done it. And this is the hubris and arrogance of American science and medicine today. It is palpable. In fact, I was just filming a board-certified cardiologist, and he was telling me the power of a plant-based diet. And then I said, okay, beyond the plant-based diet, would you talk about the role of ubiquinol, coenzyme Q10, and cayenne and hawthorn? He said, I will, but I can't. I said, well, let's just try. We'll film it again. So he said, there's a lot of hope, and I've seen it with my own eyes, when people change to a plant-based diet, along with statins. So I stopped. I stopped the camera, and I said, you told me before the interview you don't use statins. And he said, well, there's a third rail, and any doctor in America, in any field, if they suggest that something works beyond diet, that where it means you also have to take something out of the equation, like a drug, then you're going to get attacked. And he said, so as long as we just say diet's important, but make sure you take your chemotherapy, your statins, your tranquilizers, then you're okay. Then you're just a little eccentric, a screwball, but you're not dangerous. Tell your patients not to use drugs. You're dangerous. Tell them that a nutrient can do more than a drug, and safely, you're really dangerous. And I said, do you care at all about all the people who are watching this who would think to themselves, I thought statins were not healthy. Well, they're not. Then you don't do a service to them. Anyhow, that's common. If you were only sitting behind the camera with me, you'd see this. And then I come back to this question again that's happened at the Institute. I said to them, I was able to heal cancers of radiation burns on their back, but also of liver cancers. And they say, well, that's not possible. And I said, the problem with science is monotheistic. Let's say that you do a study and you find that, yes, there is a statistically significant increase in survival on vitamin C helping with lung cancer. But you will not for one millimeter say it may also help other cancers. In the militant, in the really obstinate way that they think, single-minded, they'd say we need a study of vitamin C for every cancer in order to make any statement. So the idea that something is good with one cancer may help other cancers is simply not in the way they think. It's not a part of their intellectual linguistic thought process. So if you were to take vitamin D and it says it's going to turn off inflammation in your lung, why wouldn't it turn off inflammation in your joints or your brain or your eyes and protect you from macular degeneration cataracts? An inflammatory cytokine goes throughout the whole body in about 6-7 minutes. So it's going everywhere. If you can trap it in one area, that means you can trap it in all areas. It's just our entire scientific model is so out of kilter to reality. And then if you say, by the way, watch those commercials. Next time you see a commercial for a drug, watch what it says. And this drug helped improve by, you know, a certain percent sleep. And it'll also say, along with diet and exercise. Well, which was it? How do you know it wasn't the diet and exercise? Did you do a study by itself? Did you compare the drug with diet and exercise? No, they didn't. So that's how they protect themselves. I'm writing a major story now on what needs to change in medicine. I don't think it'll change, but we can change so we don't buy into many of the lies, because it could cost us our health. Now, from the University of Agriculture in Poland, published in the Open Chemistry Journal, they found that not only are berries at the top of the list of healthy foods, but also they have the greatest amount of antioxidants, and that reverses the effects of free radicals, and they're natural, and they provide energy. And all that is good. It's good for your heart, for cancer, for arthritis, for stroke and respiratory illnesses. And what they found was, yes, there's the goji, G-O-J-I, the acerola, the acai berry, that make the headlines as superfoods. But for the health-savvy European consumer, the native homegrown species could be even more alluring. The current study at the University of Agriculture in Krakow shows in the what is called the old continent foods in the berries. And here they found that it was the phenolics and anthocyanins in the black raspberries and raspberries and blackberries were terrific. And they all were able to confirm that antioxidant activity of natural products correlates directly to health-promoting properties. And finally, from health and nutrition, what is the healthiest berry? Well, according to research done in Poland, it is the black raspberry. Now, the black raspberry, they say, is the highest in proanthocyanins. It is better than the blackberry, the raspberry, or the strawberry. And it's common over there. You can get black raspberries. I grow black raspberries, and they're generally just seasonal, but you can get them organic, frozen, and they're terrific. So black raspberries, they really help us. Good for the skin, good for hair, good for memory, good for the whole body. Turns off inflammation. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. A lot of good programming. Please stay with us.
It's on a shelf.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll on the road and have about 60 more people to film, so I'm going to be out here a while. Let's talk about the environment, something that we don't see. And because we don't see it, it doesn't play into our context of what's important. But it is. I'm talking about the Tibetan Plateau. That is the life-giving source of Asia's major rivers. And now, according to Alex Kirby of Climate News Network, they're suffering from desertification. Well, you'd never think of the desert being up where you have all that snow. And here's what he says. Scientists at the latest Paris talks on climate, their top scientific body, talked about the climate change turning the Tibetan Plateau into a desert. Quote, the damage is not only transforming grasslands and wetlands into sand and rock where nothing can grow. The plateau is also the source of Asia's major rivers, on whose water about 1.4 billion people depend. More than 100 scientists have contributed to a report published by the Chinese Academy of Sciences that discloses the rate of the desertification process and its spread. The report, which appears on a website in their newsletter, the Third Pole newsletter, says the plateau is already warming twice as fast as the global average. The scientists expect temperatures there to rise up to 4.6 degrees centigrade by the end of the century and say that glaciers are shrinking, lakes expanding, and river flow increasing, all signs of an intensifying water cycle. And while more water is flowing on the plateau, the desert is spreading and will continue to expand. And together with melting permafrost, that releases methane gas, by the way, the growing desert is thought to be the major driver of environmental degradation on the plateau. So it's a threat. And by the way, we have the North Pole and the South Pole, but we also have what is called the Third Pole, which is the Tibetan Plateau. And it holds the largest store of fresh water outside of Antarctica and Arctic. And it supplies 10 of Asia's major rivers, including the Yangtze, the Yellow River, the Mekong, and that helps a lot of people. But it's all a problem now. So keep that in mind. And why? Put some pieces together, just for a moment. We have about 60 million people currently, right now as I speak, who are refugees, either in their own country like Yemen, or Iraq, or Syria, or other places, or who have already fled and can't go back. Not all of it's because of civil war or American regime change intervention. Some of it has to do with the fact that there's too many people living in a given area. They've torn down all the trees, and as a result, they've made a desert. And also, water tables are dropping. Potable, usable water is shrinking, and only about 1% of the world's entire water is drinkable, safe drinking water. 1%. And as a result, that 1% is in areas where a lot of people can't get it. And so you have 60 million. Now, if we continue on the trajectory we are, and it's likely we will, meddling in everyone else's affairs, creating a new Cold War, continuing to keep bases open in over 900 bases around the world. Now, I want to do something a little different. I want to share some audio clips from important discussions. Some are shorter than others, and then I'll give my feedback. This is getting vaccinated is like playing Russian roulette. And how's it going to impact any person? More and more Americans are now questioning the safety and efficacy of vaccines, as well they should. And here's why.
A WA father of five says his life has been ruined by a single vaccination. Ben Hammond became a quadriplegic, unable to work, and he's now at risk of losing everything. Oliver Peterson with this exclusive report.
It should be the happiest years for Tanya and Ben Hammond raising their five children. But any chance of normality ended when baby James was born 8 weeks premature. Before Ben could see his newborn, he needed to be vaccinated for whooping cough. It almost killed him.
For a good 6 months in the hospital, I couldn't move a thing. It was just a general tiny movements in limbs. I couldn't move my legs. I couldn't feel them.
He became a quadriplegic.
Horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. Watching your husband go from the big Aussie man that he was to a complete quad. I'm now no longer a wife. I'm now his carer. It's been very, very hard.
Ben spent the next 10 months in hospitals, most of the time at Royal Perth's Rehabilitation Hospital, where intense steroids, blood treatment and physio 4 times a day helped him to walk again. What Ben has is an extremely rare condition called ADEM, with 1 in 80 million people never fully recovering.
Nobody has ever heard of ADEM. It's acute disseminating ethymolitis is what it's called. He's got, and it's caused from the vaccination.
But the Australian Medical Association says it's difficult to prove a link between the vaccination and the illness.
This has been studied and there's no evidence to say that it is linked, but equally there's no evidence to say that it's not linked.
While he's now up and about again, he's a very sick man with no bladder or bowel and minimal function of his liver and kidneys, needing 12 tablets plus vitamins every day.
He is a shell of the man he used to be. He's got no short-term memory, which is very frustrating. 90% of the time he's in bed or laying down.
Ben is basically house-ridden. He has no immune system, so a basic sickness like a cold has the potential to kill him.
I can't go anywhere. It's just exposing my health and it's not worth it.
Ben signed a standard legal waiver before the vaccination. Despite the efforts of two of Australia's biggest law firms, there is little chance of the family receiving any compensation.
I'm not against vaccinations. I do understand why they do them, but they need to inform people of the possibility of what can happen.
The family of seven live off a pension of around $950 a week. Ben's weekly medical costs are $500. They've lost their car. Their home is next.
Can't afford to make the payments on the pension and 5 kids.
The Hammonds have just one wish.
Help, help, please. I don't know who to go through. I've tried all avenues. I've tried... All I want to do is have our home, keep our home and support our children.
Oliver Peterson, Nine News.
Now, keep in mind, what is important here is these are all pro-vaccine people. All of the people whose children or parents are suffering from the adverse effects of vaccines were pro-vaccine. It is only after you have been the victim of a vaccine that you begin to do your homework. And I believe that we deserve a national debate. If we could have the two strongest educated minds in the country who are pro-vaccine and the two strongest educated minds who are challenging the safety and efficacy of vaccines to have a national debate and let all the evidence be brought forward and then let the public make up their mind. Who do they believe? So at least they are more informed. Right now, people are completely uninformed. So when there is an adverse reaction that can be life-shattering, as this particular one you just heard is, you could say, why didn't I know? Why didn't the government look into this? Well, because the government's not going to look into anything that's harmful to you. We've seen that at the FDA and the CDC. They're completely under the captive control of the financial interest. Now, that's something I thought would be important to hear. But also today, I want you to hear a clip of Hillary Clinton. When it comes to honesty, she says two things that are diametrically opposite. How does that work unless you're engaged in living in the middle of cognitive dissonance? Let's listen in.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
Her arrival in Bosnia was not quite as dramatic as Clinton put it. Memories should always match the videotape. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News, Washington.
All my grandparents, you know, came over here and...
Turns out only one was an immigrant, three were not.
I'm very, very proud to state that I'm a full supporter of marriage equality.
I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman. I do not support gay marriage. The server contains personal communications from my husband and me. The server will remain private.
The only time I got on the internet, I did two emails. Otherwise, I didn't want to be one of them.
I have been a critic of NAFTA from the very beginning.
Frequent favorable comments about NAFTA, including this one in 1996.
Oh, I think that everybody is in favor of free and fair trade, and I think that NAFTA is proving its worth.
Participants in that event said, quote, her remarks were totally pro-NAFTA. And when Barack Obama sent out this mailer last month in Ohio arguing that Clinton actually supported NAFTA as First Lady, Clinton exploded, accusing Obama of dirty tricks.
So shame on you, Barack Obama.
So which is it? If you look at the total history of the Clintons, you'll see that on the one hand, as good politicians, they promise everything to everyone at all times. What do? When they're actually in power, they do just the opposite. She sat on the board of Walmart. She was against the unionization of Walmart. And yet she would have you believe that the union should vote for her. And indeed, some union leaders will align themselves with her without looking at her anti-union NAFTA and World Trade Organization or the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreements and what that will do to unions. So there you have a situation where she has historically been anti-union, but very pro-union leader. So the people at the top of those unions always have access to those in power, but it doesn't mean that it translates into better conditions for the union members. And we've heard this hundreds of times. So that's what you're getting. If you're a line item Democrat, you want to go right down and check it all off. She'll tell you everything you want to. Yes, I believe in equality. Yes, I believe in. But what have you done historically? Take a look behind and you'll see what she and her co-president did for 8 years. Now, one more piece here on vaccines, especially one of the most, I consider the most dangerous vaccine, the human papillomavirus vaccine, Gardasil. This is about cervical vaccine. Is it safe? Please listen.
Small things that I can do. You know, I struggle to dress myself. Fatigue can be so bad.
We thought we were doing the right thing, and it was the biggest mistake we've ever made.
And I've missed my education. I was such an intelligent girl, and now I've just got this fog over my mind, and I can't recall words.
My child has been injured by this vaccine, and I want answers.
Cervical vaccine. Is it safe?
So again, you have a person that's been injured. Tens of thousands have been injured. Hundreds have died. Some are permanently injured in their neurological system, and they're paralyzed. These were completely healthy young girls. Everything about this vaccine is a lie. And yet, it's very profitable. It's the most expensive of all the vaccines. You have to get three of them. So why hasn't the media done its homework? Why haven't, with all the resources they have, why haven't they found the information of its toxicity? It's there. It's not a secret. But instead, if you come up as an educated parent or a scientist or a pediatrician and say, I'm concerned after I look at the evidence, they will call you a vaccine denier instead of doing their own homework. The American media today is a disgrace. Now let's take a look at Alabama's neo-Nazi police, and they're taking racism to a whole new level.
Alabama, this really, to me, was not a bombshell, but for some reason, we knew all of this. But Raw Story did a great job covering the idea that Alabama cops have systematically framed black people by planting drugs and guns in their cars, in their homes, on their person. There's even situations where the person's been beat unconscious, and then the cops slip drugs, slip guns into their pocket. Isn't this something we've always assumed? It's been going on for decades now.
Well, it is, and I mean, you know, this is specifically taking place in the city of Dothan, Alabama. I know you've been there. I've been there. I mean, the whole town is basically like the city out of My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much what Dothan, Alabama is. No offense there. I got a lot of friends there.
Well, no offense.
But it turns out that the entire police department there, not only were they doing this, planting drugs and guns on African Americans, but they were doing it because it was run by neo-Nazis. We find out that all of these officers involved in this were also members of neo-Nazi, neo-Confederate hate groups.
White supremacists.
According to the Southern Poverty Law Center. So, I mean, that's what we're starting to see in places like this. And the police department there had been receiving complaints as early as 1996 from African Americans. Then in 1998, other white police officers came forward and they said, look, I have seen my fellow police officers planting guns, planting drugs on these people. And the worst part is some of these people are still in prison right now because of this, and they did absolutely nothing wrong.
Well, the worst part of that story is that this isn't a new story. This is not new. They were told about this a decade ago. And they chose to do nothing because this is what they want. I mean, leadership there, obviously in Dothan, Alabama, wants that type of police force. And until it happens to them, everything, or one of their children, everything is just fine, fine for them.
6, 5, 4.
Now to an element on the environment that we generally don't discuss. That is, extinction is forever. This is from Robert J. Burroughs from Countercurrents. He says, what do the ibex, the St. Helena olive, the Abiji dolphin, the Liverpool pigeon, the eastern cougar, the West African black rhinoceros, the Formosan clouded leopard, the Chinese paddlefish, the golden toad, and the rockland grass skipper butterfly all have in common, but which is different? From the dodo, the answer is that these species all became extinct since the year 2000, that is, in the last 15 to 16 years. The dodo, by the way, was extinct in 1662. Now, the one thing all these species have in common is that the cause of their extinction was human beings. If you'd like to watch a video which really showcases some of the extinct species of planet Earth, then you could look at Toll a Bell on Remembrance Day for Lost Species 30th, and it's at YouTube. And I'll post it so people in this audience can watch it. The real tragedy is that the few species that I just mentioned do not begin to tell the story. Recent estimates indicate that 200 species of life, meaning plant, bird, animals, fish, amphibians, insects, and reptiles, are driven to extinction every 24 hours. That's right. This rate exceeds that during the last mass extinction event when the dinosaurs vanished 65 million years ago. In short, planet Earth is now experiencing its sixth mass extinction event, and we are the cause. How so? Well, human activity now impacts heavily upon the planet, and we're using a variety of sophisticated industrial technologies to destroy other life forms in vast numbers, and thus inevitably results in the extinction of some species. In some cases, we simply hunt these life forms to extinction as a result of some misguided commercial imperative. Whether it is for food, such as the whales and many other species of fish, or trophies, such as big game animals, or raw materials such as ivory of elephant tusks, or some delusional belief in their aphrodisiac and medicinal qualities such as the horn of a rhinoceros. We kill them with sophisticated killing technologies such as harpoons and fishing nets and guns, against which they have no evolutionary defense. To give just one example, sea turtles. 6 out of the 7 subspecies of sea turtle are endangered. Why? Sea turtles are threatened due to the poaching and hunting of their shells and meat and eggs. Sea turtles are sold as a snack, with the absurd belief that they possess aphrodisiac elements. But mainly it is two things that drive species over the edge: our systematic destruction of land habitat, meaning forests and grasslands and wetlands and peatlands and mangroves, and our endless effort to capture more of the Earth's wild spaces for human use, whether it's residential, commercial, mining, farming, or military, and our destruction of waterways and the ocean habitat by dumping into them radioactive contaminants and carbon dioxide and a multitude of poisons and chemical pollutants and even plastic. There are now dead zones in several oceans of the world, not to mention the great floating garbage patches. But consider rainforest. In an extensive academic study that was recently concluded, more than 150 joint authors of the report advised most of the world's 40,000 tropical tree species now qualify as globally threatened. That's not good. In fact, you have more than 15,000 Amazonian tree species. Why are more than 40,000 tropical tree species threatened with extinction? Well, because upwards of 80,000 acres of rainforest are destroyed by the world every 24 hours, taking with them over 130 species of plants, animals, and insects. Or consider frogs. Relatively speaking, we pay a lot of attention to big and colorful species, but the species you have never heard about or which are less exotic need to be valued too, such as frogs, which, among other invaluable services, from a limited human perspective, eat malarial mosquitoes. Frogs have survived in more or less their current form for 250 million years, having survived countless ice ages and asteroid crashes and other environmental disturbances. Yet now one-third of amphibian species are on the verge of extinction. But not all of our destruction is as visible as our vanishing rainforest and the iconic species that vanish with them. Have you thought about the Earth's soil recently? Apart from depleting it, meaning the soil, we wash it away, sometimes dramatic mudslides, but usually unobstructively and obtrusively, because we have logged the rainforest that held it in place. We also dump vast quantities of both inorganic and organic pollutants into it as well. Some of the main toxic substances in waste are inorganic constituents such as heavy metals, cadmium, chromium, lead, mercury, nickel, zinc. Mining and smelting activities and the spreading of metal-laden sewage sludge are the main two culprits responsible for the pollution of soils with heavy metals. Far more common, however, is our destruction of the soil with organic-based pollutants associated with industrial chemicals. Thousands of synthetic chemicals reach the soil by direct or indirect means, often in the form of fertilizers or pesticides or herbicides or other poisons that destroy the soil by reducing the nutrients and killing the microbes in which we grow our food. For example, glyphosate affects on soil, and the bacteria in soil is very, very destructive. Using genetically modified organisms and the chemical poisons on which they rely exacerbate this problem terribly. But two other outcomes of the use of such poisons are that depleted soil can no longer sequester carbon, and the poisons also kill many of the beneficial insects, such as bees, that play a part in plant pollination and growth. And of course, military contamination and destruction of soil is prodigious, ranging from the radioactive contamination of vast areas, think of Fukushima, all right, and to the extensive and multifaceted chemical contamination that occurs at military bases. Like destroying the oceans, destroying the soil is also an ongoing investment in future extinctions. Anyway, if so far you have been unconcerned about the fate of our fellow species, you would be wise to reconsider. If you haven't checked them lately, there are lists of critically endangered, and vulnerable and near-threatened species. But heading all these lists, there should be none other than Homo sapiens. That's correct. with human extinction now possible by 2030, that's correct, that's only 15 years from now, and you can read the article, Why is Near-Term Human Extinction Inevitable, on Countercurrents, we do not have much time left to respond powerfully. Humans, as many ecologists have been noting for decades, are only one part of the web of life. Our fellow species make the Earth habitable. We cannot live here without them. So the key question is not, do you really want to live in the world without elephants? The key question is, do you really want to live? If you do, then you need to act. At the simplest level, you can make some difficult but valuable personal choices, like becoming a vegan or vegetarian, buying, growing organic, biodynamic food, and resolutely refusing to use any form of poison. But if you want to take an integrated approach, the biggest impact you can have as an individual is to systematically reduce your own personal ecological footprint. If you wish to consider such an approach, then ponder all the things you can do each day to reduce your personal pollution. By going vegan, that's one way. By not shopping at box stores. By buying locally organic raised produce. All of these can make a difference. Stop buying hardwood furniture from the rainforest. And stop supporting those nations and their products that destroy the rainforest for their own economic needs, and frequently it's woods or minerals that leave the world scarred and polluted in its afterwake. But you see, we don't see those 80,000 acres a day being destroyed. And we don't see the dozens of dead zones in the ocean, some as large as the state of New Jersey, where nothing can breathe, hence all life is dead in them. We don't see the 100,000 gallons of radioactive wastewater coming out of Fukushima every 24 hours and polluting the ocean. We don't see the species being trapped or killed. We don't see that 90% of all large fish in the ocean are extinct. No, in fact, if you live in New York or New Jersey or Connecticut, there's a whole other world you don't see. And then if you further micronize your life to going from your home on a train or a car to where you work, then all the suffering you don't see either. It's time that we took the blinders off and became responsible as human beings to our planet. I'm Gary Knoll, and now for the remainder of our program, I want to have you listen to something that's a little motivating by a person who wants you to know that how important is it what you buy? What do you do with it? I think it's nice to hear something like this. So listen up, working to live or living to work.
I read a study yesterday. It said that last year, more than half of us actually chose not to take our full vacations from our jobs. Question. Don't you think it's crazy that so many of us go into work even when we don't need to be there? Times we could be on the beach buried in sand or traveling the earth. We spend it in the office, traveling from desk to desk, buried in paperwork. See, in this chaotic world, everything goes so fast. We're so busy, seems like everyone's middle name is multitask. But now before you go and act all holier than thou, how many extra tabs do you have open on your computer right now? See, we all need time to get away from the race, for our family, friends, for the sake of our mental state. Time to rewind, recharge, and reconnect. Not reporting to the office on emails that should be on redirect. Because life, ladies and gentlemen, is all about moments. No one in history has ever been able to hold on to one. Not a single soul. And you never get them back. See? There one goes. No do-over, no rewind, no DVD root menu to skip to a previous scene. Ask yourself, how many trips did you almost take? How many sights have you almost seen? How many moments have you lost thinking about the next one? Thinking that once you get this or get there, maybe that will be the best one. Life has taught me that all we will ever have is now. But let me be perfectly clear. I'm not saying to quit your job. Even though I know you deserve a 6-month vacation twice a year. But how about small steps, short trips, with long dances, no distractions. Spend time with family instead of coworkers. Meditation instead of aggravation. Replace our screensavers with sunrises, palm pilots with palm trees. Jam copy machines with... Man, I really hate jam copy machines. The most precious thing we have in life are moments. Let's make the most of them before they disappear. Let's see the world while we still can and cherish those while they're still here. Because when our lives are almost over, it won't matter how much money we made or hours we worked or times we got employee of the month. Well, we will look back on
some inspiring thoughts. We're up to the end of this program. Please remember that we post dozens and sometimes hundreds of articles a day from all over the world on issues that empower us with their insights, plus things that warm our heart and frequently bring a tear to our eye when we're seeing how beautiful human beings can be to each other or to animals. So please check out the archives. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.